Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Michaela Lafrac. The results from Vermont's primaries are in, and the path to the general election in November is now clear. Today, we'll hear from leaders from Vermont's three major political parties, Democrats, Republicans, and Progressives. To help us understand the results of said primaries, we are joined by Vermont Public's political reporter Bob Kinzel in Montpelier. Hey, Bob.
Hey, Michaela.
All right, Bob. So I feel like one of the main takeaways from yesterday was that there weren't any huge, crazy surprises, right? Like, it was a very good night for incumbents.
Absolutely. You know, I think the big surprise is no surprise at all. As you mentioned, good night for incumbents in general and for candidates who were favored to win. And because these incumbents did win, I think it means that efforts to weaken the Democratic supermajority in both the House and the Senate, at least in the primary, have not been successful. We'll see what happens in the general election. You know, turnout wasn't very good. It was really average for a normal primary, between 15 and 20% of registered voters cast a ballot. And I think that's because there was no big overarching race that caught everybody's attention.
Well, since so many incumbents won last night, I have been curious, do you feel like, having covered Vermont politics for many years now, do Vermont voters typically favor incumbents as compared to other states?
I think incumbents have a huge advantage everywhere.
Yeah.
Because it's really incumbent, so to speak, on the challenger, to say why that person should not be reelected. And, you know, that's a tall order. People have voted for candidates multiple times, and so they've got to be convinced that there's some reason to replace that person, and that is a tall order.
Mm. Well, you mentioned that turnout was regular, which means, or average for a primary election, which means it was relatively low, around 15 or 20% on average. What do you think that says about voter motivation going into the general? Or can you see those numbers being a lot higher because we have this big presidential race going on too?
Oh, I think they're going to be a lot higher in November. The presidential race will bring people out. We're going to have some really good contested statewide races and legislative races. And I think if you look at individual districts from yesterday where you had contested races, you would see the turnout is considerably higher than the statewide average. So what really turns voter turnout is having an exciting race where voters feel like they've got a choice. And that drives turnout more than anything else.
Mm. Well, before we get into some individual races, I want to talk about another type of excitement, maybe not the good kind, that came about in Windham County. Windham County Democrats, and the Vermont Democratic Party sent out a press release last night claiming election interference in the Windham 1 primary. This was because a number of Guilford residents received letters in the mail with these fake Town of Guilford labels on them that claimed that a local candidate and the select board chair was guilty of criminal activity and election fraud, unfounded claims. And this morning I spoke to the Secretary of State, Sarah Copeland-Hansis, about all this. She called this dust-up, quote, par for the course in small-town politics. Bob, do you think dust-ups like this, however small they might be, could shake people's overall confidence in elections?
I don't know if it shakes their confidence in the election itself, but it certainly is a disturbing trend. We see it happening at the national level, and now it seems to be filtering down at the state level. And it's really difficult because false charges are raised at the last minute to discredit a candidate without disclosing who is paying for the attack, so there's no way to link it. And, you know, I wonder if we're going to see more of this kind of activity with the emergence of artificial intelligence. You know, I can imagine someone using AI for a recorded phone call that deceptively uses a well-known and familiar voice to alert voters about the scandalous behavior of one of the candidates. For instance, let's take somebody who has a very recognizable voice. Bob Sanders.
Kinzel. Sorry.
Well, let's take Bernie Sanders. Imagine his voice being used in a robocall to criticize a Democratic candidate. You know, it'll sound very real.
Yeah.
And we just have to hope that voters are on the lookout for these kinds of deceptive campaign tactics.
Something we'll be keeping an eye on in the lead up to the general, I'm sure. Well, let's start at the top of the ticket from yesterday and work our way down. Now, in the Democratic gubernatorial race, Esther Charleston of Middlebury won the nomination over Peter Duvall of Underhill. She did very well, but she has quite the road ahead of her in this race against Governor Phil Scott, yes?
Oh, she really does. You know, she's been very critical of Phil Scott's vetoes last session on affordable housing, the funding of education, the overdose prevention center. And she says as governor, she would work to create more common ground with the Democratic majorities in the legislature. That's something she says Scott has failed to do. Now, she faces a real uphill fight. You know, there are going to be some very clear differences on issues in the general election race between Esther Charleston and incumbent Phil Scott. At the same time, as we were just talking earlier, she has to present the case that it's time for Phil Scott to be retired. And she's doing that at a time when Phil Scott has one of the highest approval ratings of any governor in the country, and he gets elected with a lot of Democratic support. Add to that, in the last 75 years, there's only been one time that Vermont voters did not reelect an incumbent governor. That was back in 1962. So I think Charleston's big challenge is to make the case of why Phil Scott should not serve a fifth term as governor. And it'll be very interesting to see how this campaign unfolds.
Well, we would love to hear from you about why you voted in the elections yesterday. And if you didn't, we'd love to hear why, too. 800-639-2211. Tell us about the issue that got you to the polls, maybe the candidate, or a reason why you felt like you didn't want to or couldn't vote in the primaries. Again, 800-639-2211. Now, Bob, the lieutenant governor's race has been a really exciting one to watch. Tell us what happened on the Democratic side first.
Isn't it interesting that we're saying this is the most interesting race that there is? But it really is. This is going to be the big one, I think, for the general election. On the Democratic side, we had three-time incumbent David Zuckerman being challenged by Thomas Renner, who is the deputy mayor of Winooski. You know, I think some people thought there might be an upset here, but Zuckerman has been in politics for a long time. He served in the House. He served in the Senate, the three terms as lieutenant governor. He's built up a very faithful base of support throughout Vermont. And both of these candidates are very similar on many issues, very progressive stands. And so Renner really tried to emphasize his belief that it's time for a change in leadership in the Democratic Party, but he didn't seem to have the financial resources to get that message out effectively. Zuckerman really is the leader of the Progressive Party in Vermont. Supports higher taxes on the wealthy, universal health care, strong steps to deal with climate change. So his positions are well known. People know what they're getting with David Zuckerman.
And on the Republican side, the Democrat turned Republican John Rogers beat out the more MAGA Republican Gregory Thayer by a pretty wide margin. What do you think his chances are against Zuckerman?
I think it's going to be a fascinating race. Rogers has a message that I think resonates with a lot of Vermonters, and that is he wants lawmakers to focus on basic economic issues, the high cost of living, the skyrocketing cost of health care, how housing and rental costs are totally out of control before they tackle issues like climate change. He's got kind of an informal and folksy campaign style that I think many voters will find refreshing, and it does set up a fascinating race with Zuckerman. And I think the underlying issue in this race is this. What's the appropriate role for government in solving the key issues facing the state? Is government an essential part of the solution Or is too much government part of the problem? I think you'll see Zuckerman advocating for a strong government role in most cases, and Rogers will argue the opposite. So voters in November will have a very clear choice in this race, and looking forward to the Vermont public debate on it.
Yes, I am as well. That'll be happening this fall. Oh, Bob, there are also some closely watched House and Senate races in the primaries. Let's start with Chittenden Central, where the three incumbents prevailed. Tell us about that race.
Boy, this was a cliffhanger last night. I was following this every 5 minutes when it was refreshed at the Secretary of State's website. Well, there were three incumbents here: Phil Bruth, who is the Senate President Pro Tem, and two first-term senators, Tanya Vahovsky and Martine Gulick. They all three ran as a team, and the challenger was former TV news person Stuart Ledbetter, who raised the most money of any of the candidates in this race. Now, this is considered to be one of the most progressive districts in the state, and I think that favored the incumbents. It was a close race all night long and was ultimately decided when the last town in the district reported its votes. So the three incumbents prevailed. Ledbetter came around 300 votes short of winning.
300 votes short of winning. So that's still semi-sizable for that district.
It is, and I think the fact that the incumbents hung together as a team made a big difference.
Yeah. Well, let's take a call. Listeners, we've been asking for your reasons for voting in yesterday's primaries. If you did vote, 800-639-2211. Ann in Bradford is calling in. Ann, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, my name's Ann Taylor, and I put my name in against Governor Phil Scott. I have never been so uninformed as a voter in my entire life. I'm older, and I don't know the computers. I have to go down and try to figure them out at the library. And then I have no money for a computer or a house that would keep a computer alive here. It's very hot in here.
Yeah.
It gets very hot. It gets cold. So anyway, but I think this state could go a lot better than it is. There's a lot of classism here. And I've talked to a lot of disgruntled people.
Yeah, Ann, thank you. Thank you for calling in. And I would love to hear Bob's thoughts on Ann's concerns about classism and how, both. I think it kind of ties into this issue of affordability that came up in a lot of different races.
It did. And I think this is an issue we're going to hear a lot from John Rogers about.
Yeah.
That, that these are the kinds of issues that he thinks the legislature really needs to address. Affordable housing, affordable health care, just the cost of living, rather than having the legislature go off on things like climate change or suing fossil fuel companies. He wants to really represent the working person in Vermont. And he's going to really stress that during his campaign. So it'll be interesting to see if that message resonates with a lot of voters. And I think it probably will.
Yeah. Well, and we appreciate you calling in. We know that a lot of listeners to public radio don't have easy access to online news media. And so we appreciate you listening here today. Bob, before we let you go, I do want to ask you about the challenge that we saw to Emily Kornheiser, who's the chair of the House Ways and Means Committee down in Brattleboro. I thought this was a really interesting kind of referendum on tax policy.
It absolutely was, Michaela. And that's because Emily Kornheiser, as chair of the House Ways and Means Committee, has played a pivotal role in the debate over taxes and particularly property taxes at the State House. Her challenger was Amanda Ellis Thurber, who is a farmer. She was very critical of that final property tax law and argued that Vermont doesn't need higher taxes. It needs more taxpayers. But I think the solid victory for Kornheiser shows strong support for her leadership of the Ways and Means Committee and how those policies will help guide Democratic priorities in the 2025 session.
Well, Bob, lastly, as we speak right now, we are 82 days, 12 hours, 38 minutes from the general elections. We've got the countdown clock going here. Senator Sanders and Representative Ballin are up for re-election. Are they facing any challengers?
They're facing challengers, but you have to say their chances of victory are excellent. In the U.S. Senate race, Bernie Sanders will be facing Gerald Malloy, who ran a couple of years ago against Peter Welch. Sanders has to be the prohibitive favorite in that race. Over in the U.S. House, Becca Ballant, who has served one term now in the U.S. House, is faced by Republican Mark Custer from Winooski. She has a very strong following in Vermont, and I would think that both Bernie Sanders and Becca Ballant have excellent chances of being reelected.
Vermont Public's political reporter Bob Kinzel in Montpelier, thanks as always for talking with us and putting all these races in context.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Michaela.
We'll be speaking now with the leaders from all three major political parties in the state. First up is David Glidden, the chair of the Vermont Democratic Party. David, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Michaela.
Now, there have been a number of candidates with progressive values that have run as Democrats in this election, including Lieutenant Governor David Zuckerman. And the party, at least in my mind, it does seem to have moved left in recent years. I mean, some politicians have even left the party entirely and are now running as Republicans, like John Rogers, who had a decisive win in the Republican primary for lieutenant governor. I'm really curious to hear what you think of progressive-minded candidates running in Democratic primaries.
You know, we are a big tent and welcome folks with many different political values. You know, I think if I look at who won these contested primaries, it was pretty consistently folks who have really strong community connections, who have a record of public service. I'm thinking about Emily Kornheiser, who has done a great job advocating for long-term systemic solutions. In terms of our relationship with the Progressive Party, I mean, that is obviously a complex one. It varies race to race, but we are certainly a big tent. I'm excited to see Catherine Sims in a great position up in the Northeast Kingdom. And, you know, that is a big tent going from the Northeast Kingdom down to Brattleboro. And I think Democrats represent all of it.
Do you agree that there has been an overall leftward shift for the party? And if so, do you have any concerns about that?
That's an interesting question. I don't think there's necessarily been a leftward shift. You know, I think the values of the Vermont Democratic Party have remained the same. You know, I heard Bob Kinzel talking about climate change versus economic growth, and I don't think that is a framing Democrats buy into. We can do both, and we need to do both. You know, we have an opportunity to build climate resilience as we build 21st century infrastructure. You know, talking about both doesn't mean you're emphasizing one over the other.
Well, the Democratic gubernatorial candidate, Esther Charleston of Middlebury, is now facing the most popular governor in the country, Phil Scott, in the general elections. What is the Democratic Party's strategy for elevating her in this race?
You know, I can't help but notice that we, for the first time in Vermont history, are nominating a woman of color to be governor. At the same time, we're nominating a woman of color to be president. I think folks are really excited to see new lived experience in elected office and leadership. I also think Esther stands on an incredible platform of public education, which is critical right now. You know, she's worked in our public education system. Frankly, she has more public education experience than our current Secretary of Education. And I know that that matters to many Vermonters, and we're really looking forward to highlighting her experience there.
What about help with fundraising? As a four-term incumbent and a very popular governor, Governor Phil Scott has always had, you know, no trouble of fundraising for his re-election campaigns. And Esther Charleston is going to face an uphill battle when it comes to getting that money into her campaign.
Absolutely. We have no qualms about that. But I think partly, actually, if you look at last night's results, last night was a victory for field and grassroots over money. It was the folks that were door knocking, who were making phone calls, were the people that won in the end. And I have seen so much engagement from our grassroots, both about the national politics, but also about critical politics here at home. And we have an incredible volunteer base that we are excited to really engage in the next 82 days and see what incredible progress we can make.
Well, let's talk a bit about what happened in Windham County during this primary cycle. The Vermont Democratic Party and Windham County Democrats sent out this press release last night about an anonymous letter that was sent to a number of people in Guilford accusing the select board chair, who is also a candidate, of attempted election fraud. These were false claims. The executive director of the Vermont Democratic Party called on law enforcement to investigate and to take it seriously. First, do you know who did it?
Certainly not. That's why we are looking for an investigation. I think it's really important and concerning, particularly in this case. It's concerning that that mailer was made to look as though it was official municipal correspondence, which is really incredibly unethical. And it's important that we know if who has done this and who has tried to represent themselves in an official capacity when that is not appropriate in an election.
And any other major takeaways from the primaries last night? What trends did you see emerge? What are you excited about most?
I was excited to see how engaged voters were. You know, if you look down in Bennington County, write-ins appear to have won that, which is a real level of engagement to get folks to write in a name. I'm excited for some of our candidates who didn't have contested primaries, but I think will be incredibly competitive this November, whether that's, you know, Zach Scheffler up where I am in Franklin County, Catherine Sims in the Northeast Kingdom. Just because they didn't have a competitive primary doesn't mean they haven't been working hard. And I'm really excited to keep that momentum going towards November.
David Glidden is the chair of the Vermont Democratic Party. David, thanks so much for chatting with us today.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful time.
Well, up next, we are joined by the chair of the Vermont GOP, Paul Dame. Paul, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. And listeners, if you're just joining us, we are speaking to the leaders of all three major political parties in Vermont. We just spoke with the chair of the Vermont Democratic Party, Paul Dame, with the Vermont GOP, joins us now. And soon we will talk with the executive director of the Vermont Progressive Party. Now, Paul, I want to ask you first about a specific race in the Chittenden Central. Tanya Vyovsky is one of three incumbents who won there. The Democratic Socialists of America endorsed her, which I believe you've drawn attention to in the past as an example of a leftward shift in the Democratic Party, a shift that the chair of the Vermont Democratic Party, David Glidden, says, you know, isn't really happening in the way that it's been described. What do you think that her win says about the values of Democratic voters?
Well, I think that overall, I mean, that race and a few other data points to me seem to send the message that there's no place for moderates in today's Vermont Democratic Party anymore. I think it has definitely moved much farther to the left in a way that would have seemed unthinkable 10 years ago. I know a lot of the strength that the Republican Party has, or the newer strength in places like Franklin County, are coming from people who used to consider themselves, you know, John F. Kennedy Democrats, and have recognized the party has moved away from them. And I think that's why you have John Rogers not only deciding to run as a Republican, but also to see Republicans supporting him in a Republican primary that had fairly low turnout. And so it seems to clear to me that the message for moderates is if you want a more moderate message, if you're looking for someone to be an ally for Governor Scott instead of an adversary, the candidates you're looking for, you're going to find them in the Republican Party, where the Democrats are moving farther to the left. Tanya Vyovsky, again, a literal socialist, Democratic Socialist of America, endorsed Maduro in Venezuela, but not AOC because she was too moderate. It's an alarming signal for Vermonters, who I think are pretty independent, pretty middle of the road. Stuart Ledbetter ran a great campaign that was focused on issues of housing and affordability, and that wasn't enough.
Yeah, well, I'm just curious, Paul, how dire this situation is. I mean, you're painting a pretty dire picture here, but I mean, many of the same voters who are electing Democrats and progressives are also voting time and again for Governor Phil Scott. I mean, he's the most popular governor in the country in a overwhelmingly blue state. Do you really think that the Democratic voters are abandoning those moderate ideals?
I think that they are, in terms of the people who are making up the leadership in the Democratic Party and who are voting in the Democratic primaries. I think part of what we saw with a low turnout in the primaries is a lot of moderates didn't engage, weren't involved, and that's where I think Governor Scott gets a lot of his strength. So the people who consider themselves moderates and independents, you know, weren't really weighing in on these primaries, or not by large enough measures to counterbalance some very far left ideas from the more hardcore party faithful among the Democratic Party. Hmm.
Well, let's look a little closer at the lieutenant governor's race, a really fascinating one on both sides of the aisle. John Rogers, who won the Republican primary yesterday, was a lifelong Democrat, served in both the House and the Senate here in Vermont as a Democrat up until this election season. And voters decided to back him over his opponent, Gregory Thayer, who was at the Stop the Steal rally in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. His positions line much more closely with those of former President Donald Trump. What do you think about what this primary says about Republicans in Vermont and their positions on former President Donald Trump?
Yeah, I think it's clear, again, that you see even within the Republican Party in Vermont, there is much closer alignment to Governor Phil Scott than President Trump. And we saw, I think the lieutenant governor's race was a litmus test for that. And so it's not just that Vermonters are, looking for moderation, but even the Republicans who get involved in primaries are looking for a middle of the road, common sense approach, again, looking for allies, not adversaries, to help the governor make Vermont more affordable. And I think Vermont Republicans saw John Rogers as a person who could do that. I had the chance to serve with John Rogers. I was in the House when he was in the Senate. And he always seemed to me to be like a reasonable guy. I always wondered why he wasn't a Republican. And glad that he realized that to do what he hasn't changed, but the parties have changed around him. And I think there's a lot of Vermont voters who are feeling that same way. And we're encouraged that that people like Rogers are going to draw those more centrist voters to vote Republican, maybe for the first time in a while.
Hmm. A lot to follow in the next couple of months. Paul Dame, the chair of the Vermont GOP, thank you so much for talking us through these issues.
Glad to do it anytime. Thanks for having me.
Let's take a couple calls next. We have Jane in Montpelier calling in. Jane, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi. Okay, so the reason I was, I tend to vote anyway, but I was particularly determined to vote yesterday because there has been so much talk lately about democracy being on the ballot, and there's one particular presidential candidate who I think would be just as happy if we never had to vote again. And so I was determined to vote yesterday to let people know that this is my vote. I care about it, and don't take it away. And yes, I still care about democracy. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane, for calling in and telling us why you voted yesterday. We'll go next to Sally in North Ferrisburg. Sally, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I was choosing to vote again, just as the other caller said about, it's our democratic duty to cast our votes. And I was looking for candidates that were right on the forefront saying that they were pro-Palestinian, that they were anti-genocide, that they were apartheid-free Vermont, being part of the Vermont Coalition for Palestinian Liberation. That was very important to me. I would have voted for the candidate that the Socialist Organization endorsed, but I couldn't because I was in Addison County. But that's basically why I wanted to vote, was wanted to find candidates that were going to say that so that we could stop arming a country that's you know, creating genocide.
Well, thank you, Sally. If you're just joining us, we have asked listeners to call in and tell us why they voted in yesterday's primary elections. Maybe there was a particular issue that matters a lot to them or a candidate that they were very motivated to support. You can still join this conversation by emailing us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org and telling us what issue or candidate matter most to you in this primary election cycle. We've been speaking with the heads of the major political parties in Vermont. Up next is Josh Ronsky, the executive director of the Vermont Progressive Party. Josh, welcome to the show.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. Thanks so much for joining us. Now, as we discussed earlier with the head of the Vermont Democratic Party, there have been a lot of politicians with progressive values running as Democrats. And the Progressive Party has endorsed Esther Charleston for governor, David Zuckerman for lieutenant governor. Both ran in the Democratic primaries. Mm-hmm. I guess my question's a rather blunt one. What's the point of having your own party if you're backing Democratic candidates?
Well, look, so this is nothing new. This is how the Progressive Party has operated for, you know, well over a decade. We've been running candidates in the Democratic primary as fusion candidates. This is nothing new in the kind of American electoral system. This is something that's existed since, you know, as long as the party system in the United States has existed. And, you know, the history of that is that originally we did just run candidates as progressive only, and you know, in many of these races, we had local Democratic Party leaders say, you know, they really wanted, you know, elected progressives around the state to consider running in the Democratic primary to, you know, build better relations with Democratic primary voters and avoid situations where you have three-way races and a, you know, potential Republican gets elected because a Democrat and progressive split the vote. So, you know, many of our candidates over the past 10 years or so have decided to engage in that system. Now, I don't think that's a perfect system at all. I really want us to move forward with ranked choice voting, public financing of elections, you know, these democracy reforms that will make it make voter choice more possible on the ballot in the general election. But that's, you know, that's the system we have now, and that's what we've been engaging in.
Yeah. Well, Zariah Hightower ran uncontested in the Progressive primary for lieutenant governor. Will she go on to run in the general, or is the Progressive Party going to move on and endorse David Zuckerman?
No, yeah. So Zariah intends to withdraw from that race, and we have already endorsed Zuckerman, and we'll be considering a nomination, likely be nominating him at our state committee meeting on Saturday. And I expect that he will run, as he always has, for both state senate and statewide office as a progressive / Democrat on the general election ballot in November.
Hmm. Where do you see the Progressive Party differing the most from the Democratic Party here in Vermont?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's really those core issues of economic justice. You know, let's take property taxes, for example. For as long as the party has been in existence, we've been advocating for progressive taxation systems that ask the wealthiest folks who can afford to pay their fair share so we can fund public services that Vermonters have been really clear they want to fund, and do that in a way that doesn't burden working class people. So we've actually in the past pushed to get rid of the property tax system entirely and replace it with a progressive income tax. That's something we've been talking about for like the entire existence of our party. You know, we've been talking about raising the minimum wage to a living one. Now, I think Democrats are starting to adopt that more and more and more. You know, back in the early days of the party, you know, this was something that really only progressives were pushing. We take no corporate money. I think you saw, especially in this most recent election, a huge wave of money being spent by large businesses, landlords, Republicans, in the Democratic primary to try to unseat progressive voters. We've said time and time again that we not only refuse that type of money, but we don't believe that it has any place in our political system because elections should be about people, not about corporations. And, you know, we've seen even Democratic candidates very willing to accept that kind of money. So, yeah, I would say it's those core kind of economic justice issues that we go beyond just saying, you know, we are going to fight for climate change, to address the climate crisis. We are going to fight and continue to fight for ensuring that racial and social justice is on the forefront of the agenda, but also in terms of an economic justice policy that puts working class people first by asking the wealthiest Vermonters to pay their fair share. I think that's a core difference.
Josh Ronsky is the executive director of the Vermont Progressive Party. Josh, thank you so much for talking through these issues with us today. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you.
Well, let's take one more call from a listener calling in about why they voted in yesterday's primary election. Charlie is in Barrie. Charlie, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I was raised a Democrat in Maryland, a very Democratic state, by two public librarians, but I'm going to vote for Phil Scott in this election, and the reason why is twofold. One, taxes. The property taxes increased the access to affordable housing. And the second is the left policies regarding the drug and opiate problem. Needle exchanges are a place where you go and you exchange needles for new needles. But in Vermont, there's so few people that they just give you bags and bags of needles. That's why they end up on the street. And the safe injection sites, these studies were done on major metropolitan areas, not like Vermont. While they do help the spread of HIV, I'm not sure it's needed in Vermont.
Well, Charlie, thank you so much for calling in. Charlie just shared that taxes and the different approaches to the opioid crisis are the main reasons why they are voting the way they are in the general elections